Brian Lawton, former NHL player, GM, agent, analyst, now for Sportsnet, joins us. Brian, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jason. How are you?
I'm outstanding. Yesterday was interesting. We had the beat reporter on from Washington, Brian, telling us, Brian McNally, about how, you know, McClellan talked about the one thing he was going to do different was that when George McPhee was the GM, you being a GM, that, you know, I understand delegating to your guys, but a lot of times when they talk to their to the free agents or their big guys, he wasn't the main guy doing the negotiations. Is that normal practice, or do you think, you know, the GM should be heavily involved when you're talking big-name free agents or your top players?
Well, when you're talking big-name free agents, you know, as far as being heavily involved, of course they should be heavily involved in the recruitment of the player because, you know, one of the interesting dynamics is acquiring free agents has been turned into a similar event to, like, college recruiting. You have to go out and sell your program. You have to go out and sell your coach, your city, your arena, your management, everything. And I don't think there's many people better suited to do that, or at least to lead the charge, than your general manager. I think the coach is critical in that. I think the owner is critical in today's game. But, yes, your general manager absolutely should be doing that. As far as the negotiating with the agent, that's a different story. And we're seeing a lot of general managers, and I spoke to one the other day, that told me, you know, I really just don't like having to go in there and nickel and dime the players at times. It just isn't worth it. And he's got a complete buffer in his system set up as to how they're handling it, so he can be removed a little bit from that so it doesn't necessarily affect his relationship.
Yeah, I guess that's the interesting one. Brian, you've been involved in the negotiations, and I don't know how hard they are or if they ever really become that personal. I'm guessing that's got to be the key, is that you don't ever make it personal because ultimately you want this player to enjoy playing for the organization.
That's true. The one thing that might shock people out there, though, is that you very, very, very rarely have the player on the phone when you're actually talking about numbers or anything like that. I had it happen to me once in Tampa because I didn't like the way that when I got to Tampa, I didn't like, quite frankly, the way that Vinny Letavier's contract was structured. So I asked Vinny's agent, Ken Hughes, at the time to jump on the phone with Vinny and let's talk about it and let's see if we can change anything. I can tell you it didn't necessarily go that well as far as outcome for reaching a better resolution, but that was one of the very few times where the player was actually on the phone and we were talking about actual compensation and not talking about the other things that you like to talk to players about when you're general manager, which generally is the direction we're headed in, how they fit in, what your expectations are of them, of the team, and those types of things. You know, to be on there talking about money, it is a difficult position to put a player in and to put a general manager in.
Brian Lawton joins us. Brian, let's get to the game tonight, Chicago-LA. The LA Kings right now, they just didn't look like they got no weaknesses. Great goaltending, outstanding defense. You know, they're scoring. They've got speed and size up front. Chicago's second line, there's a massive hole right now. Like Michael Hanzus drank from the fountain of youth last year as a second-line center. And right now, though, they just don't have an answer. That seems to be a big void. Any way you feel, do they change the line? Do they do something to try to get their second line going offensively?
Well, I think Joel Quenneville will definitely do something. Nobody can move the pieces around better than Joel. But at the end of the day, what you're saying is exactly correct. The LA Kings are just a freight train right now coming down the tracks. And their depth looks so impressive in all four lines. Their D looks fantastic, and we could talk about, you know, some of the newer players or younger players, like Jake Muzzins and even Martinez contributing more than they have in the past. But for me, it still comes down to Drew Doughty being the best defenseman in the National Hockey League right now, certainly in these playoffs. And then, of course, the goaltending. There's just, you know, maybe the other guy that you would consider instead of Quick, Henrik Lundqvist, ends up in the finals, and maybe that's the most important piece we should take from that analysis. But the LA Kings, when you put it all together from top to bottom, there is nobody that even looks close to them right now. And I have great respect for the Chicago Blackhawks and where they're at, but this has not been the series that I thought it would be so far.
Well, I think you look at the changes from last year when they beat L.A. in that series. You just look at, you know, who's not here, right? Frolik, Bolin, Stahlberg, and they really haven't replaced those guys with better pieces. And L.A., on the other hand, you know what, Toffoli's a big player now, and, of course, Marian Gaborik's being a huge addition. Like, it's such a fine line that one or two guys can really ultimately make the difference in your depth if you're going for a championship.
Yeah, it really is, and you're right. Toffoli has been amazing. So has Pearson, and, of course, Marian Gaborik has worked out better than anybody could have imagined. A lot of people were concerned that this could go the other way on them, and what would they do? It was a calculated risk that's really worked out well. And Chicago's side, yeah, sure, they've lost some key pieces. I think it's a glaring hole, like you're pointing out with Michael Hanzus. You know, it just didn't really, you wouldn't have predicted coming out of San Jose that he would be able to go to Chicago and have that type of success, particularly when San Jose's thought process was, let's get faster, right? Let's move Michael Hanzus out. Let's eventually get Doug Murray out. You know, let's go that way and make our team, you know, let's get Ryan Klo out. So, you know, that was a move that really paid off for Chicago last year, but this year it has looked like a glaring weakness and one that Daryl Sutter has been able to expose very heavily in this series so far.
Brian Lawton joins us. Brian, the Combine, having been involved in as an agent and as a GM, it seems... how much of an impact, honestly, do you think can be made at the Combine at this point, a month out from the draft?
I think it's very difficult for players to move themselves significantly. And when I say significantly, I mean by, you know, more than four or five picks. I do think that it's still an important time. I can remember being at the Combine and having gone to a game for John Tavares earlier in the year and watching him play against Erie at the time, and Ryan O'Reilly was playing for Erie, and he was tremendous. Well, I can remember, you know, coming back, he wasn't really a focus for us in the first round. He was more of a guy pegged for the second round, and seeing Ryan at the Combine and thinking, my goodness, what a man this young man is. I mean, he was as strong and as fully developed as any player we had on our team. So you can have some of that effect where maybe you can verify what you've seen, and it can move a player around. So it is an important time, but I don't think you're going to see guys jump, you know, by more than four to five spots maximum.
Yeah, exactly. So really then, from a GM's perspective, you're going in there, you probably have your list of, you know, if top five guys, maybe top 10 players that you really want to talk to and sit down in those meetings. Did you ever sit down in a meeting and come out of there saying, man, we really like this guy, what he does on the ice, but his mindset or his answers, we just can't draft him?
I did have one player, and I sat in for about 45 interviews, I would say, my last year, and there was one player that absolutely just rubbed me wrong, and I won't say his name because he is playing in the National Hockey League now. He's been traded. We could turn this into a trivia. But it just wasn't a fit philosophically for a lot of the things that he was saying for me. And the player ended up getting picked much higher than I thought. And he is playing to his credit, and he is moving forward, and I hope it goes well for him. But I absolutely came away from that combine thinking we are absolutely not going to draft this player. It just does not fit for what we're trying to create culturally.
But then, and so you never drafted him, or you did draft him?
No, we did
not.
Okay,
did not draft him. Now
he ended up getting drafted much higher than I would have thought, and that's some of the variance that you get. You know, one man's treasure might be another person's garbage when you're being evaluated. It's a tough process, but the nice thing is ultimately, and as I said, this player is playing in the league, and he's making decent strides. He was picked a lot higher than I would have thought, but. So you know, that was just my analysis.
When you talk about a philosophical difference, was it, you know, just their viewpoint on how, you know, on hockey on the ice, or more from, you know, how they deal with it off the ice? And the reason I ask that question is because there's a lot of parents out there whose kids are going to go to these things in the next few years. And what is the, you know, you have to be yourself, of course, but what are kind of the red flags from a GM's point of view that went off for you in this case, without naming names, of course?
Well, everybody talks about character, and you know, it certainly shows itself in different ways in a hockey game. It can be, you know, as simple as a player standing up for another player. It can be as simple as a player, you know, on Alex Ovechkin, like finishing his back check, you know, shift after shift after shift. It could be like watching Marty St. Louis the other night when they were down by a number of goals, and his work ethic is exactly the same as any other time in the game. That's character. So that's on the ice. Now you want to find out and see if you can analyze and evaluate it off the ice. And that comes down to how they live their lives, what's important to them. Those are the types of things that we would dive into in those interviews. I really was almost kind of bored by 50 to 60% of the questions that we were asking. Very, very similar to what every club is asking. I was more interested in getting to know the player and getting to know what made them tick. And that's what helped me to analyze their character. And, you know, ultimately, having interviewed a lot of people in my life, not just hockey players, I have what I consider a system, and I have things that I look for, past history of success and things like that. So it makes sense to me. It's never 100% foolproof, but you do have a process. And if you follow it enough, you're going to have more success.
Brian Lawton joins us. Brian, looking at this year's draft class, you've got Ekblad clearly a standout as the defenseman. No one else even close to him, really. The centers, though, there's a lot of them in Bennett and Reinhardt and Draisaitl. I know you're still close to the business. What are you hearing on those guys? Who do you like amongst those players?
I was in to see a couple series in the West at the end of the year. I saw Medicine Hat and Edmonton, which was a very interesting series, and I was thrilled for Edmonton to go on and win, obviously. They had an incredible team, and I wasn't surprised they won in the end. But I did see Kootenay and Medicine Hat earlier, and I really liked Sam Reinhardt, but he did not play nearly as well in that series as he did in the previous one against Calgary. And I think that kind of opened things up a little bit as to how this final order shakes out. You know, for me, I have different philosophies. We've talked about this before, Jason. I like to select a player for where your team is at, especially this year when you have what I consider certainly four guys that are very, very close. So, you know, a defenseman looking at a certain team that has that need might be enough to push him ahead, certainly of Bennett and Reinhardt, in my opinion.
Do you expect deals, and how hard, like Brian, how hard is it to move into the top five, and how risky is it for somebody to move out of the top five in your like experience? Because I just, we hear about it, oh, there's going to be, and then it never happens, right? Like Columbus and Florida swapped a few years ago with Nash and Bomeister. That might have been the dumbest trade in history for Florida. They moved down two spots and had to give up more draft picks to do it because they had to give some to Atlanta just so they wouldn't take Bomeister at number two. Like it turned out to be one of the more ridiculous trades I'd ever seen.
Yeah, and, you know, everybody talks about it every year. You know, interestingly, this year, Dale Talon has been, you know, somewhat forthright that the first pick is for sale. Come and get it. Now, we haven't seen anything happen, and I don't really believe anything will happen at the end of the day. I don't think anybody will give him the type of value that he would want for that. You know, after that, is Buffalo, Edmonton, you know, are Vancouver, Calgary going to try to move up? Yeah, I think it's possible, but I do think that we're seeing more and more that people want to hold on to their draft picks. They feel like it's a real key to success long term. They certainly feel that it's a cheaper alternative. You know, let's say, for instance, Winnipeg decided to make a player like Evander Kane available. you know, is somebody going to trade a top 10 pick for a guy that's essentially making $6 million a year and you're not sure on? You know, that's the type of analysis that's going on out there. And I can't tell you one way or another if I looked at that type of scenario. I couldn't tell you with any certainty that Winnipeg would do it. And I certainly can't tell you with any certainty that anybody in the top 10 would do it.
Yeah, it's risky both ways, man. I'm a big fan of Evander Kane. And, you know, like a lot of players, maybe needs a little bit of maturity, which happens when it clicks. Man, that guy can skate. He's got great size. He can finish. And the young players, while they're always rated great, they still haven't succeeded in the NHL. And we've seen over the years, there's always a few guys who go in the top 10 who never end up being top 10 players.
Yeah, and you just don't know. Evander was the fourth pick, obviously, in 09. But, you know, look at Sagan last year. I mean, who would have, you know, really thought that he would explode as much as he did this year? We might have thought he'd have a good year, but not to the level that he had this year. And that's the risk involved. You know, obviously Jim Neal felt good about it. That was a pretty courageous move, and he went out and did it.
Brian, always good to catch up with you. Should be interesting finals in the East and Western Conference and leading into the Stanley Cup. And then, of course, pretty much when that's done, we get into the buyout period, then into the draft, followed by free agency. It should be busy. We appreciate your time.
Well, always my pleasure. I'm really looking forward to see what happens with the compliance buyouts this year. That's going to be interesting.
Anybody that you know, there's a few obvious ones. We know Marty Havlat's getting bought out. You know, I think Ville Leino in Buffalo is an obvious one. Is there anyone, you know, do you think Richards in New York would be a possibility at all? Or is that $8 million bonus that he's getting paid on top of it just, it's not worth it financially?
I think that Richards and believe it or not, Marian Hossa are definitely two guys that at least will get consideration just because of the way the rules were written. Those are two guys that are, they're both very good hockey players. I mean, Brad, to be fair to him, is really having a nice run for New York. But just the way that the final end result for the terminology, you know, with regard to these guys and the recapture, I think that these are options that are absolutely going to be on the table. I think Glenn Sather is going to have to take a long, hard look at that. I think Stan Bowman's going to have to take a long, hard look at what he does with Marian as well.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. Fun to watch. We appreciate your time, Brian.
My pleasure. Thank you.